The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTates.com studios.
Great Tuesday, and I mean it. Great Tuesday. Brad Sesmatt, Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. It's great to be part of the Arizona Republic on White Mountain Radio and on Twitter at Brad Sesmatt. Great show ahead, as always. Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider. Pedro joins us every week. We'll talk some Major League Baseball. Clark Kellogg, you saw Clark last night and throughout March Madness on the set. Clark Kellogg joins me directly to talk about Sean Miller's name around Kentucky. If, in fact, John Calipari leaves to go to the Lakers, could Sean Miller bolt from U of A and go to Kentucky? I'll talk to Clark Kellogg directly about that in about 25 minutes. You can always reach me on Twitter, at Brad Sesmatt, C-E-S-M-A-T. A couple other things that I'm working on as well, along with Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything or Nothing on today's show. Was not a great game last night, aesthetically, I didn't think. But I was glued. You know, how can you not like to see a bunch of freshmen running around on the floor at Kentucky? And then you see his program like Connecticut that has been scorned by the NCAA, that has been told you cannot participate. They come from this little conference that the Big Ten didn't want them. The ACC didn't want, nobody wanted Connecticut. And if you're talking about in the grand scheme of things on the college front, Connecticut basketball in the last dozen years would have to be right alongside of UCLA and Kansas and Duke in North Carolina. Nobody wants to admit to that, but that's where Connecticut is in the grand scheme of things. I was rather entertained last night watching the game. I was rather entertained seeing John Calipari crap the bed, essentially, within the last minute from a coaching standpoint. His players didn't know what to do. And I think that when you have that bright light and that bright moment, that you see how a coach's team is ready to play. Kevin Ollie's team had more experience at Connecticut, so we'll talk about that. The Suns on their day off before they go to New Orleans. Some news and notes around the NFL today. The Texans scheduling a couple of visits from quarterbacks and where that stands now. We're just about a month away from the NFL draft where we finally get this over with. The intrigue around that. Arizona State basketball continues to be a disaster. Anybody who's going to try to tell me, oh, you know, you're overreacting to this again, Brad. No, I guess I just kind of have high expectations. I don't know when Eric Musselman leaves as your assistant head coach, associate head coach, and one of your top recruits doesn't make it academically, I'm just not supposed to be concerned. So I got to pound them over the head. And the Diamondbacks playing at San Francisco today. Trevor Cahill's on the mound. I've seen Trevor Cahill's act. I need to see more of Trevor Cahill's act. I don't know about that. I think I'm probably going to see 5 1/3 innings with 8 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 walks, and a couple of strikeouts. That's about what I'm going to see. And then I'm going to hear, well, yeah, but look at all the ground ball outs he got. I don't care. It's the usual deal. His earned run average is 10. Well, you're really not giving him a fair shake. Archie Bradley's sitting down on the farm, and he's had one great start already at Reno. I don't care about clocks ticking. When I get notes from you on Twitter, at Brad Sesmatt, oh, you don't understand the grand scheme of things with Archie Bradley. You're right, I don't. All I know is he's killing it down on the farm. The team's gotten off to an awful start. And Archie in the rotation is going to give me more than I'm going to see out of Trevor Cahill. I don't need to see a guy in fourth place in August on the mound and have innings taken away from somebody who could potentially be a number one starter. So, yeah, I got a little bit on my mind today. Here's Eric now with our Facebook question of the day to get us off and running. Eric Sorensen, big part of the program. What do you got?
Yep. Believe it or not, Brad, we are 1 month away from the NFL draft. The first day
Thank
of the
God.
NFL draft is, drum roll, May 8th. So,
I think it's Johnny Manziel today, by the way.
Yeah.
Number
probably.
One pick, but.
Most likely.
I wouldn't do it myself.
No, I wouldn't either. But We're not the Texans.
I'm not the crazy owner that's looking to sell jerseys.
The Cardinals are selecting 20th overall, as you know. So we ask you today, pretty simple. The one position you'd like to see addressed with that pick is fill in the blank. Head over to Facebook.com/Sports360AZ. Like the page. Share your input. I'm just going to go big, broad picture here and say they've addressed enough areas via free agency.
Sure.
That Steve Keim, I trust you. Whatever you do with the 20th pick, you're good. Even if it's not a finger,
that's kind of weenie-ish.
Even though it's not a
something
finger quotes need area, you have enough flexibility now because you know you found Ted Ginn and you signed Antonio Cromartie.
At least
there are positions that were addressed this offseason, so you don't have to say, you know, the old Cardinals was, well, we absolutely positively have to take an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
I know Adrian Peterson is there. But guess what? Levi Brown, you're going to look really good in red and white.
That bad Levi Brown.
It happens. It happens to every team, though. So,
well, I don't know about every team.
It does. Tell me a team that hasn't had a bad pick.
Oh, no. That's true. But when you have offensive linemen that through the years haven't worked out, and when you draft a quarterback in the first round, the top 10 picks, and doesn't even come close to working out, and when you pass on Adrian Peterson, it finally adds up. So a guy like Steve Keim, I would disagree with you. I don't think they've done enough at safety. Okay, I don't think that they've done enough still on the offensive line.
Adrian Wilson's available.
Yeah, I saw that. Wow.
Sorry.
But you know, it's fine. But taking a tight end, can I make a case to take a tight end in the first round? Sure, I can make that case because I've heard from talking heads, oh, man, we are so excited about what we have at tight end, and it just hasn't panned out.
So well, they did sign John Carlson, so we'll see what John Carlson can do.
Yeah, so I'm looking at offensive line. I'm looking at safety. I'm looking at tight end. Do I think you need to start looking at your defensive front? Sure, I do. I think there's still needs, is my point. You can't, if they took a wide receiver with the first pick, I would be disappointed in them. If you take a running back now with a first round pick, that's a bad move.
The last running back they took with the first round pick didn't turn out so well.
No, and
even though he was the last pick in Beanie Wells.
There's just no reason to take a running back at 20. If you're in the top five and you see somebody, even then, they only have a shelf life of 3 or 4 years. So I like that question. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ. Pedro Gomez here in about 5 minutes. And then Clark Kellogg from Dallas, or North Texas, as they keep saying. He'll join us, too. Let's get you caught up. Some of the things on my mind in the world of sports brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains where spring has sprung. Friends of mine up there are saying they're on the golf course at Pine Top Country Club doing their thing. That means you need to stay at the Honda Resort and Casino, go play some golf, get on out and hike, do some fishing. It's that time of year. And at night, get all cleaned up in your room at the Honda Resort and Casino and pull down on the slots. Eat some great food, have some fun, decompress, get away from it all. That's at the Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. So we are Arizona-centric. That's my view, is let's just be very, very local. And I've got some national stuff I want to get into. So I'm going to tie two together into one. And that's Sean Miller and his name circling around Kentucky if John Calipari were to leave. So let's go back on the Calipari rumors after last night's game where Kentucky loses to Connecticut. Here's John Calipari after the game. This started with Rex Chapman. Eric sent me a text last night. What was it, like the first half? Have you seen what Rex Chapman is sending out?
Yeah, I saw it on Twitter, and I was like, oh, wow, Rex Chapman.
So Rex Chapman, we know Rex. This last year, Rex did the games for Dan Marley over Grand Canyon University. Rex is in the Valley. Rex is a Kentucky alum. I think Rex was very influential in getting Kentucky to schedule GCU for next year. So we connect all those dots. I know Rex Chapman enough to know that Rex Chapman is not going to be sitting around saying, oh, hey, I'm going to pick up Twitter and I'm going to put, you know, I think it'd be kind of fun to just throw it out there. Why not? That's not Rex Chapman.
When you talk about putting your credibility on the line, if you float something out like that on the day that Kentucky is playing in the national championship, you better have some people deep, deep, deep rooted in Kentucky that's telling him, you know what, this is probably going to happen.
So he's tied into the athletic department in a big, big way. And would it make sense to have John Calipari go to the Lakers? Yeah, it would. Would Jim Buss give up all the creative control? I'm going to get to Sean Miller on this, but first, here's Calipari on whispers. He was asked about it after the game. Whispers he's heading to the Lakers.
Lakers have a basketball coach. Kentucky has a basketball coach. I got the best job in the country. I'm not going to even dignify that stuff.
So what he didn't say is, no, I'm staying here.
Ding, 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 ding.
So what we try to do with sound bites is just get through the BS meter, because nowadays most of these guys have been trained enough. If somebody asked him, have you talked specifically to the Lakers? He'd say, no, I haven't, which is a lie. Are you supposed to ask it in this way? Have your representatives been in contact or contacted the Lakers? Have you or your representatives contacted or contacted the Lakers? So Rex puts this out there that John Calipari and the Lakers is something that I didn't see the exact tweet, Eric. Can you fill me in here on was it very specific? Because Rex has gotten in the middle of the storm today for suggesting this. Calipari's asked about it afterwards.
Yeah, he just said win or lose, it's something to the effect of John Calipari is going to coach the Lakers next
okay,
season.
Okay, so that's very definitive. So Calipari gives the standard, I'm not going to dignify the question, blah, 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 blah. And then it's like Nick Saban leaving the Dolphins to go to Alabama. You can go through all these guys and how they gave the denial and then it happened eventually. This is not some random website. This is somebody who's really tied into Kentucky. So Sean Miller, is Sean Miller ready to leave Tucson to go to Kentucky if the opportunity presented itself? First, it's come out now that Mike D'Antoni, and about a week ago it came out that Mike D'Antoni's already talked to the people at Marshall. Does that make sense that Mike D'Antoni is saying, yeah, Marshall? It probably doesn't make sense to Lauren D'Antoni, because Lauren is the one that drove Mike to take the Knicks job to begin with. When Lauren had the opportunity to go be a daytime talk show host fill-in because she was here in Phoenix, she was the one that was driving Mike, and he'll deny it till the days, but I know this as fact. They were in our building when I did TV at Channel 3. And she was in the building and she wanted the whole daytime talk show deal. So she's the one, hey, Mike, go to New York. Come on, let's get out of here. So Mike goes to New York and we all know how well that ended. But wait, hey, Mike, we can go to LA. And we all know how well that's going. So I think eventually what's come around here is I've made a gob of money, so I'm Mike D'Antoni, and I'm either going to get fired or I'm going to quit and go to Marshall, and I'll take Dan with me, my brother, and we'll go back to Marshall, and it makes perfect sense.
And Brad, just scrolling through Rex Chapman's timeline, he also said last night, I would say that Sean Miller's name would be at the top of any shortlist.
Okay.
Because he was asked on Twitter, if Calipari leaves, who do you see as the prime candidate?
Okay, so knowing Rex once again, and knowing Rex has never been somebody, Rex is not media friendly or media savvy, in my opinion. Has he come by? Is he somebody that you could talk to off the record about some things and get some very straightforward comments? Sure he is. But I've never known Rex Chapman in all my years here in the Valley to be somebody who would angle or drop things irresponsibly. Okay. I've also known him to be very truthful and very forthright. Sean Miller's done a very good job in reestablishing what's gone on at the U of A in their basketball program. However, there is a culture that pervades the U of A that is like a pro basketball program. If Sean Miller were to leave tomorrow, I don't believe that the program would suddenly resort back to how it was after Lute unceremoniously was pushed, walked, left, and all of that. It wouldn't surprise me a bit. If you're a U of A fan today, you would be devastated on one hand. If you're an ASU fan, you'd be thrilled because they own you. Oh, wait, we beat them, Brad. No, you didn't make it to the Elite Eight. You didn't even make it to the Sweet 16. You're not bringing in five-star recruits. You can't even keep junior college players and keep them eligible. Let's not even sit here and try and compare the two programs. That's a fact. Pedro Gomez on the other side. We talk baseball, Diamondbacks on the road at San Francisco, and a few other things nationally on my mind with Pedro Gomez. Clark Kellogg in about 15 minutes, and I'll ask him about Sean Miller and the Kentucky Wildcats. I'm Brad Sussmat.
react, and interact to our Facebook question of the day. Like our page at facebook.com/sports360az. Time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sesmann.
Here's Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst, Baseball Tonight in studio, man of many talents, of course, Valley resident. I am not going to sit here and talk about the Diamondbacks' slow start. I did that last week because I think it's going to turn into slow month, slow 2 months, slow 6 months. And I don't want this show to be over and over and over the same thing. Here is Pedro now. What game are you doing this week, by the way?
Wednesday Night Baseball is in Toronto tomorrow, but Canada is quite expensive, so we are not sending a reporter. We're not sending a second analyst. We're kind of doing it as inexpensive as possible.
Even at ESPN?
Even at ESPN, correct. Now, my next game is Monday. We have a doubleheader Monday. And I have A's Angels on Monday.
Where's that game being played?
Anaheim.
Okay. I'll get into that in a second. I do want to ask you about Mark Trumbo. So the Diamondbacks, we know their record's not good.
He's from Anaheim, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so did you expect a guy like Trumbo to come in so quickly and make an impact with the Diamondbacks?
Well, he's capable of that. I mean, you're talking about a guy that is a free swinger, and it's certainly not a surprise that he would go on a streak like this. That's what the big home run hitters tend to do. Think of Adam Dunn. Think of even going back to Richie Sexton. You know, they can hit six in a 9-day span, and then they can go 3 weeks maybe hitting one. I mean, that's kind of the game that big power slugger has. So, you know, the fact that it came during the first week of the season, it's not surprising. He will have other weeks like this, and his run may not be over quite yet. You know, when guys like that are in a groove, they tend to go for a good 10, 12 days hitting, you know, 9, 10, 12 home runs. So when you're hot, it's hot, and when you're cold, it's very, very cold for guys like that.
And that's how he is then. You don't expect a consistent pattern of him.
It's never been his game, and mm-hmm. it's never been any big slugger's game to have a consistent pattern. There's peaks and there's valleys, and there's really nothing in between for guys like that.
Well, I mean, I go back when we were kids, Dave Kingman, okay, he was an all-or-nothing guy. George Foster, when he was with the Reds, he'd hit 50 home runs, but he wasn't an all-or-nothing guy, in my opinion. Then we go through the years where there's the big power hitters, the big Bob, like you mentioned, the Sexton deal and
McGuire
and Sosa. Yeah. So are we in a different era of power guys? Meaning, can we see Trumbo as a 35 home run guy, and that's a really high end number for a guy like him? Or do you think he can exceed that, given that you don't expect this to continue, Pedro?
Well, I think what you see is the traditional power numbers. You know, it was not unusual throughout the 70s and 80s for the league leader in home runs to have as few as 32, like Dick Allen did 1 year for the White Sox back in the early 70s, or as much as 49, which guys like Willie Stargell would hit, things like that. So I think the league leader will probably be somewhere in the low 40s. I know that last year Chris Davis hit 53 for the Orioles, and that was astonishing. But I don't know that you're going to see many of the 50-plus seasons anymore. I think now that PED use is probably, for the most part, eradicated from the game, I think you're going to see more traditional numbers, and it'll probably be in the high 30 to mid-40 range, and that's about what the league leader will gather by season's end, year in, year out. You know, there'll be an exception here or there, but for the most part, that'll probably be the league leader in the 35 to 45 range.
Pedro Gomez talking baseball with us every week. ESPN baseball analyst Pedro Gomez, Valley resident with Brad Sesmat, Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central on the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sesmat. I found myself, even though the team stinks out loud here in the first week or so, that when I know that Trumbo and Goldschmidt are going to be coming up, I don't move, which is...
Oh, I do the same thing.
Yeah, and if we're talking about tandems in baseball, where would you put the power tandem of Goldschmidt and Trumbo?
Ooh, you know, when you're thinking about the last 10 or 15 years, I think it's probably somewhere in the Miguel Cabrera-Prince Fielder or the Ryan Braun-Prince Fielder with Milwaukee, somewhere in there. It's a very powerful tandem, and, you know, Goldschmidt is a better hitter in the sense that he has better plate discipline.
Right.
But in terms of each one being able to rocket a ball 400-plus feet, it's certainly one of the better tandems of the last 10, 15 years. And I, Brad, I do the same thing when I see that either Goldschmidt or Trumbo or both are going to be coming up to bat, like, okay, you know what? I can wait on washing the dishes or
get out of here. You don't wash dishes. You don't do chores. Shut up. You're doing baseball all the time. Come on. You're not normal.
Brad, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, no. I don't think I would be, because I'm right there with you. You know, the only difference is, hey, Pedro, score me some tickets to the World Series because you're Pedro Gomez. You know, right? How many times have you been hit up for free stuff and tickets?
Again, you would not be surprised at the number of that, but I do not receive free tickets to anything.
Yeah, Pedro's just a walking PayPal for everybody. Of course I'll get you tickets. You know, Dodgers, Tigers tonight, I'm right there.
Exactly.
So I want to see Archie Bradley pitch. I don't want to see Trevor Cahill. I've seen enough of Trevor Cahill. I have a really good idea that he's going to go 4 1/3, 5 2/3. He's going to give up 8 hits. He's going to give up 4 earned runs. Am I wrong here? Bradley already had one good start down on the farm. Why am I going to see Trevor Cahill today against the Giants? How much longer can I see an ERA of 10?
I think you're going to probably – we're not going to see Archie Bradley probably until sometime in June.
Come
on. A lot of that has to do with the baseball rules.
I know.
As you and I know, the Super 2 rules where you can hold on to a guy and he's not going to hit arbitration until after his third season and – you know, it gets complicated, but basically you see it every year with these stud players who are just waiting. You know, their engines are revving at the minor league level, and clubs, because they don't want to start the major league clock, wait until about that. It's always a date that kind of shifts back and forth a little bit, but it's usually around the first week of June, and that's why you don't see call-ups for those super stud minor leaguers until that time, because the clubs do not want to start the clock on these guys. And it's unfortunate that that rule exists in baseball, because really a lot of times clubs are hurting themselves by not bringing up their best prospects.
Come on.
And trying to win right away.
Kevin, when you're fired as GM because you had another bad start, and Gibby, when you're hosed because you had to lay around for 3 months and watch Trevor Cahill do his thing, Ken Kendrick, you're going to pay him big jack anyways. Come on. I can make a very compelling argument, Pedro, on this one.
Well, and the thing that surprises a lot of people that are in baseball, mostly the players, because the front office executives tend to stick together on this one, but the players basically say, wait, if this kid is that good and he does reach arbitration earlier than maybe other kids and he does command that kind of salary, that means he's done something good.
Yeah.
That means he has performed at a high level. So you should be wanting that kid up because he's going to help you win. And you know, it just comes down to economics.
That's a crazy owner thing, in my view.
It comes down to economics a lot of times, and the clubs just want to hold off on paying an extra year of big salary. They don't want to start that clock so that he reaches arbitration earlier than he would. And it's very, very unfortunate. Because, I mean, just quickly, so that maybe the people that don't understand, you don't reach arbitration until after your third season in the big leagues. However, if you're brought up, there's something called a Super 2.
Yeah.
And it's the top 17%. And if they've only got 2 years of major league service, but they're in the top 17%, then they can start the arbitration their third season instead of their fourth season. And that's what clubs try to avoid. And you see it every year, and it's unfortunate because a lot of times they end up hurting themselves. I mean, Will Myers sat down for Tampa Bay last year because they didn't want to start the clock. He ended up being the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
What if he had been there from opening day?
Sure. And that's my point here. We're not sitting here at 2-7 saying Gibby's on the clock, and anybody who knows Ken Kendrick knows he's not going to sit around, and he doesn't matter that he gave him an extension in the offseason. He's already done an interview with me where, yeah, I got to sit back and watch this and judge and evaluate everything. All right, I get what you're saying without saying it. They better get off to a good start. They haven't, and so we have to see Trevor Cahill again today. And it just and then the Giants are playing well. That's the other thing. Tim Hudson killed the Diamondbacks last week. San Francisco's in front of the Dodgers today. You said last week on the show you expected the Giants to have a good start to the season. So you're not surprised by what's going on in San Francisco, are you?
Not at all. You and I also talked last week, and remember we talked about how you cannot win a division title in April, but yeah, you can certainly lose a division title in April. And if you bury yourself enough, that can happen. And right now the Diamondbacks are in a position where they certainly can bury themselves with another poor week or two, and to the point where they can't make up that kind of ground. So I'm not surprised with the Giants. I thought that they had really good starting pitching, and it's certainly showed itself so far. And I think that you've got very motivated players in the lineup. You've got Michael Morse, who has kind of bounced around the last few years, and he's got a lot to prove in terms of showing that he is a competent major league player. So you've got Pablo Sandoval, who becomes a free agent at year's end and wants to remain with the Giants. You've got Buster Posey, who is a fantastic player. So you've got a lot of motivated pieces with the Giants. And, you know, preseason-wise, they asked us to make our picks. I picked the Giants over the Dodgers to win the division.
And the Diamondbacks have 9 of the next 12 against the Giants and Dodgers. So to your point, while they're already, I think it's 4 games back, 9 of your next 12 against the Giants and Dodgers, without the pitching outside of Miley really showing that he's got something, your bullpen has not been very good. How am I to not think that we're going to be sitting here looking at a 5-14 start to the season or something along those lines?
And see, that is where you can get buried, because
yeah,
it's not so much, because at 5-14, you'd probably be about 7 games out of first place. And certainly somebody would say, oh, they're only 7 games out. The problem with 5-14 is you're now 9 games under 500. And just getting back to 500 is such, it's so exhausting for a club. That's the part where you can get buried early. You can get buried in April and never be able to recover. And I think I saw Miguel Montero talk about it after one of the games in Colorado, and he's certainly right that they can get so far behind this early that it's almost impossible to catch up.
Yeah. So if you go sweep the Giants and then you have the Dodgers rolling into town, all of a sudden everybody's happy and excited. But
of course,
you know, I just don't see that out of this rotation. So I hope I'm wrong. I don't want to sit here and every week you and I have to bang each other over the head with this stuff. So I'll let you go off that. Stay well. Safe travels.
All right, Brad. Take care.
Pedro Gomez every week, ESPN baseball analyst, inside what's going on around the major leagues. Appreciate Pedro's great insight. ESPN baseball analyst, part of what we do every week here on Sports 360 AZ. We switch gears. On the other side, Clark Kellogg joins us from Dallas. From ESPN's Pedro Gomez to CBS's Clark Kellogg. Not bad. That's next, Sports 360 AZ. On AZ Central Sports, good to partner up with the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Sports360AZ, AZ Central Sports on the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Obviously here in the state of Arizona, a lot of intrigue around what happened after the game last night. Sean Miller's name with Kentucky, if in fact John Calipari leaves. I'm not going to get into that with Clark Kellogg initially. I want to talk about the game itself, because here's Clark with CBS Sports. Clark's been on the show many, many times across the great state of Arizona with Brad Sussmat. Aesthetically, was it a great basketball game? Because I've heard, no, it wasn't a great game. I tend to differ, okay? I was thoroughly entertained last night. What about you, Clark?
Oh, no, I was certainly entertained. It wasn't as entertaining in terms of aesthetically pleasing as the game last year when you had Louisville and Michigan both making tremendous plays and being efficient offensively. But it was just as compelling and dramatic because the outcome was in doubt until really the last minute or so. And there were ebbs and flows, not a bunch, but a couple. UConn's up 15. Kentucky goes to the zone. Some foul trouble to UConn's Daniels and Boatwright. And Kentucky makes some threes, and it's a four-point game. It's a one-point game multiple times. So I thought it had all the drama that you would want in a championship game.
Were the lights too bright for Kentucky early in the game? I've heard that narrative today. Where are you at on that?
Yeah, you know what? I know Coach Calipari mentioned it, and he knows his team better than any of us. So I would agree with him that there was a sense of nerves, not to be unexpected, though, for that group. And to their credit, as they had done pretty much throughout the tournament, actually throughout the tournament, they didn't shy away, and they found a way to get themselves back in it and had opportunities to come out on top. I mean, you look at the free throw shooting, the multiple opportunities, they're down one and weren't quite able to get over the hump. So they put themselves in position even after that shaky, nervous start, and that's a credit to the coaching staff and to those kids.
Clark Kellogg, CBS Sports, there last night. Throughout the national championship, we've seen Clark on the set getting it done with CBS. He joins Brad Sussmat here for a couple of minutes. If you were to start a team, because I know you have your NBA side too, but if you were to start a team and look at these players on both sides last night, who's the player you take to start the team?
Oh, there's not a player of that caliber anywhere in the country to me. I mean, the kid Joel Embiid has great potential, and as a dominant center, he's able to regain full health. I mean, that's the kind of piece that you might consider building around. Certainly Andrew Wiggins has tremendous potential. I think Jabari Parker, if he decides to go, would be another guy that would be a really important piece based on his potential. From last night's game, I don't think there's anybody out there that would be of that ilk. When you're talking about building an NBA team, I mean, you're talking about trying to find those players that are really look like almost for sure multi-year all-star caliber. And I'm not quite ready to say that about any of the players that were on the court last night.
And my point on this question, Clark, is those were two teams then. This wasn't an individual. That's the point that I'm getting at.
That's a good one.
And so when you do look at these individuals working together as a group, there's a lot of gushing today over Napier at the next level, but I looked at him last night and said, boy, did he control himself. I thought he got worn down and made some mistakes late in the game, but man, he gutted it out. Tell me about Napier and your view of him.
Oh, I like him a lot. I like his poise. I like his leadership. I like his change of pace, his ability to shoot off the dribble. I think he's going to be a really solid rotational player in the league. Now, he might surpass that. Heck, I've been wrong before in trying to figure out where guys are going to be once they get to the pros, but I think he's going to be a guy that's more than serviceable as a point guard because of the intangibles, but also he's got skills. I mean, he's really good with the ball. He can pass it. He can shoot it off the bounce. He's crafty. He's tough. So I think all of that is going to bode well for him and serve him well as he pursues the next step in his playing career.
These kids at Kentucky, if you were to talk to them individually, would you advise them to all stay?
Not necessarily. I don't think you can ever make a blanket statement. I've always said, Brad, that it's an individual call. I mean, 30-some years ago, I left school after my junior year.
Yes.
And it was the right decision for me. I mean, I played 3 years at Ohio State. I've been exposed to NBA players and being a Cleveland native and playing some summer league ball with some of the Cavaliers. Knew that I had a chance to be a good player at the pro level after my junior year. And it was the right call for me. It's a personal call based on circumstances, ability, personality. So until I had a chance to evaluate what the motivation was, what the dynamics were for each guy, I couldn't even begin to say how I would advise them.
All the conversation, Clark, today about what's going to happen when John Calipari and lost is the job that Kevin Ollie did. Where would you put Kevin Ollie's coaching this season with this group?
Oh, phenomenal. Really phenomenal. I thought John Calipari did what he does too, which is high-level coaching. I mean, people tend to poo-poo his coaching acumen because he has such talented players. But oftentimes, Brad, it's harder to get that kind of a group to come together as a team than it is guys that more fit into designated roles. So I think both guys, and Kevin is, anybody who knows him and has been around him, never doubted that he would have success. Now, how rapidly it happened, that's something nobody could forecast or foresee, but his character, his PhD in the game in terms of having played with 10, 11 teams in the NBA, the way he comported himself, what he learned, the coaches he's been around, even his two-year apprenticeship as an assistant when Jim Calhoun was still on the bench. I mean, all of that pointed to him being really, really successful as a coach. I think the only surprise is that it happened this quickly, not that it happened.
Sure, sure. Before I let you go, a couple things on Calipari. Would you be surprised if he takes the Lakers' job?
I wouldn't be surprised if he found his way back to the NBA if he still hungers and desires to coach at that level. You know, he's had a stint there that was by his barometers and measuring sticks didn't quite equate to what he did in college or has done in college. So he might. I don't know John well enough to know if that's an itch, the NBA coaching position that he wants to try to scratch again. And if it is, then I don't know how you could not look at a situation like LA. I mean, it's in many ways a place like Kentucky.
Sure.
In terms of tradition, success, expectations, scrutiny. I mean, you can't get in a brighter, hotter stream of light if you desire to do that. So again, I don't know enough about what John's thinking, but I wouldn't be surprised if he decides at some point, sooner rather than later, to move on from Kentucky. I mean, it's like dog years coaching there. I mean, every one is probably the equivalent of three or four at other places.
That's a good way to put it. Before I let you go, then, U of A, couple thoughts there. Sean Miller's name has popped up out here. There's a lot of concern that if Calipari were to leave, that Sean Miller would be on the radar at Kentucky. I think Sean has done a very, very good job out here in reestablishing the Arizona brand. Your view of Sean Miller and where he is right now?
Oh, I've always had tremendous admiration and respect for the work he's done. I mean, his business has been coaching. His dad was a fantastic coach, obviously, Archie. So he's been terrific. And because he's really good at what he does, when opportunities present themselves at high-level places, I mean, you can't be surprised if his name comes up. I mean, it's a supply and demand business. Most of the world is. And when you have unique ability, and there's going to be demand. And so I don't know if any of that will happen or come to fruition, but I've always thought he was one of our really outstanding coaches. And really in that next tier, when you look at the demographics of the outstanding coaches in college basketball, I mean, when you look at Billy Donovan and Thad Matta, Bill Self, you know, guys in that, you know, 42 to 48, 49 range. I mean, Sean is right up there with the very best.
Based on what you've seen out of Aaron Gordon and Hollis Jefferson, are they guys, again, this goes back to you saying, no, they're not ready or not. Would you be surprised if Gordon and Hollis Jefferson stayed at U of A?
No, I wouldn't be surprised, but again, that call is a personal one.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you feel you are in your development? What are your family circumstances? What are you interested in doing as a pro player early on? Are you just wanting to leave school so you don't have to go to class? Are you really interested in being a long-time pro? What are your aspirations? And are you going to be realistic about evaluating what your chances are and how you could benefit by staying or going? I mean, those are the things that I would always have any player look at. And that's how I would do it if I had a chance with any of them. Hey, what are you hoping to do? Where are you projected to be drafted? How do you value your education and your college experience? Let's write these things down, be honest with yourself, and let's see where the chips fall after we do an objective of analysis of where you want to be and what you want to try to accomplish, and then see if it matches up with leaving early or continuing to stay in school and get better so you can better position yourself to realize your dreams and goals as a pro.
Yeah. First poll came out today, Clark, for 2015, and U of A is number one. So a lot of fans out here are holding their breaths that they do stay.
It always tickles me, man. I shut the basketball meter down other than the NBA
right
once the Final Four is over, and already we're looking at preseason polls.
I know.
And I can't quite go there, Brad. I know on talk radio you have to, but I'm thankful that I don't have to. I can focus on the Pacers and the NBA playoffs, and I'll keep abreast of college basketball from a distance, but I think it's healthy sometimes to step away from even something as good as college basketball for a period.
Amen to that, brother. I appreciate your time and insight. Thanks.
All right. Take care, Brad.
You got it, Clark. It's Clark Kellogg there with us for a couple of minutes. CBS Sports thought he did a terrific job as he shifted this year over to the studio. It was he and Charles and Kenny and doing their thing, and it was terrific stuff. That's Clark Kellogg. Appreciate his time. Brad Sussmat with you, sports360az.com. So on the other side, some NFL news and notes that caught my eye in the last 24 hours you might have missed. Scheduled visits for the Texans with the number one overall pick for two quarterbacks. I'll talk about that and much more as we continue on.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360az.
Sports 360 AZ, Brad Sussmat, White Mountain Radio, and of course, AZ Central Sports. Thanks again to having Clark Kellogg with us. Good job by Eric there. Kurt Cobain, huh? 20-year anniversary?
Can you believe it?
20 years!
20! Time is flying. Kurt Cobain ended his life 20 years ago today.
The theorists are out there. There's actually a little bit more behind this story that has come out.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's at least on the social media front. I'm expecting to read about it while I'm checking out of the grocery store, the way that it's going, which is never a good thing. It's never, never good.
Yeah, but that's kind of the society we live in, unfortunately. Yeah. So.
So while we're sitting here talking, I'm going to get some NFL stuff in a minute, and also the Coyotes have a big game tonight. Were you entertained last night? I didn't really talk to you about the
game. By the game?
Yeah.
For someone like me who had literally zero interest invested in either of these teams.
Yeah.
It's like kind of vanilla ice cream. They're just kind of out there. Yeah, it was a good – I was just happy, Brad, that it was a good competitive game because it looked like in the beginning that UConn was just going to run away and hide. So
we're convinced, though, we're on the same page that the best sporting event is March Madness or not.
It never disappoints. I mean, there's always everyone's like, oh, I'm not really into college basketball. And then after March Madness, people are like, oh my gosh, that was one of the greatest tournaments ever.
Because like, I'm watching Julius Randle last night. And what I notice when I talk on this show and I put this show together, it's things that interest me, but it's also those around me that aren't the diest of diest hard sports fans. I want people that have a life that actually, you know, live life and they're not sitting there all day and all night, and all they do is sports over and over and over. So my 18-year-old daughter comes down, and she sits down to have dinner, and she pulls her dinner over to sit and watch the game with me, and she's like, oh, that's a great pass. Wow, that Julius Randle guy, he's huge. Hey, Napier's pretty good. That was a great pass. Boy, they really moved the ball well. She's an athlete. She's played sports. And she wasn't there on her iPhone, and she wasn't there on her iPad, and she wasn't on Instagram, and she wasn't texting, and she wasn't doing anything other than sitting with me watching a game. And she didn't just sit there through dinner. She actually sat there through a commercial break, a second commercial break, all the way to halftime. What does that tell me? It's a high school senior.
It's a rarity.
Exactly. And then my wife comes in, and she sits, and she watches, and she's leaning forward, and she's like, wow, so Connecticut, they didn't play last year, right? First of all, it's so cool I'm married to somebody who knows this. Second of all, she's watching the game as it progresses, and she's into it all the way to the end. There was no, I'm going to go upstairs, or I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to do that. She's leaning forward and having another adult beverage and really enjoying it. My point in this is when you watch Super Bowls very rarely, other than the commercials, can you draw people together because the games, for the most part, blow. For the most part, the Super Bowl is just about who's partying with who and how big can you make this thing. That doesn't mean I'm not into what's going to happen here next year, but I've done a Super Bowl where I've recorded it and I've gone to Disneyland for the day.
Smart.
Okay.
If you don't have a dog in the fight and if it's just the Super Bowl.
Haven't done that. I mean, and so I come back that night and I watch the game and I was at Disneyland with nobody else. And I'm a sports guy. It wasn't like I didn't pay attention to my craft. It's I can watch commercials and I can watch the game. Last night, there wasn't anything that I was going to go do. It was one of those deals where, okay, Dad, you're not going to take Cole to swim, or you're not going to go show up over at the soccer practice. No, because I have to work tonight. I wanted to watch that game from start to finish. And I very much enjoyed it. I haven't seen the number yet today. The number, to me, it's irrelevant now. The TV number is irrelevant. What did it do in the way of people on their phones and on their iPads and all the digital platforms? Because none of you are really into sports, watching it start to finish like you used to be. I sat with a guy this morning that watched the St. Louis Cardinals baseball game because he's a big fan of the Cardinals and Waka. And they showed the game on the MLB Network last night, and it took him 22 minutes to watch the whole game. He just sifted through, saw the score, saw how they scored, saw a couple of outs, didn't watch one commercial. Guy's 38, he's educated, he makes good money, makes good jack, huge sports fan, not going to sit there and say, I'm taking 2.5 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours off to watch a game. That's how it's changed. And as I watched it last night, I'm thinking of all these draft picks that the Suns have. And I asked Clark about, you know, who's the player, and I understood where he's coming from. But who's the most draftable player? Who's the guy that you look at? If I had a chance to have Julius Randle on my team and put him down in the low block for the next 8 to 10 years, now I don't know what type of kid he is. I know that watching him, he was a man against boys down low during this tournament. I don't know how bad his foot was hurting or his ankle was hurting last night, but I thought he ran out of gas. The Harrison kids, I don't care how high maintenance their dad is or how they were never liked in the club scene. That happens all the time. Do they project at the next level? So I'm watching the game a little differently. Is Napier somebody that I could see the Suns taking that could come in and be a nice role player for them? Yeah, I could, but I think they're pretty well stocked at guard. If you're going to go down that path, it means you've already given up on Archie Goodwin. So I don't see where Napier is somebody, but with all the picks the Suns have, how could you not sit and watch March Madness and say, wow, with a potentially as many as 4 draft picks, I could see this player, this player, this player, and this player all coming to play for the Suns next year. Did you find yourself saying that too, Eric, as you're watching it?
Not really. I was just kind of watching to watch it. I was sort of...
But during the tournament, the whole tournament, were you looking at players or no?
No, because I just didn't follow it close enough this year. I just wasn't...
Like Ryan Anderson at UCLA, if the Suns have all these first-round picks, I would most definitely take a flyer on Ryan Anderson and just sit on him for 2 years.
But who knows? That's the thing about the draft. I mean, who knows about any of these guys?
When you're taking all these underclassmen, you have to... It's you're a Wall Street trader. You have to be able to say, we're going to take a kid that we know is not even close to being ready, but for 3 years, we're going to sit on Ryan Anderson because there's a little bit of Magic Johnson in him.
Did
Andrew Wiggins tear it up this year at Kansas? No, he didn't.
No.
But if I'm in a top 5 spot, if I'm Ryan, you know, if I'm sitting here and I'm Ryan McDonough with all these picks, is there somebody that if they make the playoffs and they finish 7 slots lower, and that's just a tired narrative to me, it's not the end of the world, would I be willing to blow up my whole draft to go get one of these guys? And as I was watching them, I don't know enough of all of them, but I certainly like the grit and I like the toughness and I like the competitiveness. Those are the measurables I saw in the tournament of a guy like Napier. How could you not notice that?
Ask the Cleveland Cavaliers about drafting a player high that doesn't, at least right now.
Well, Anthony Bennett didn't work out, but Kyrie Irving sure
has. He did, but still, there's just
and he's
that.
Not
but
happy
last
there
year,
now.
But last year shows you there is no guarantee. There is no Andrew Luck in college basketball. There just isn't.
There occasionally there are.
Of course.
Occasionally.
Of course.
In this year's draft, would I say that there is that guy? No, I wouldn't. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. So I'm driving the Ford Fusion. The Ford Fusion makes a lot of sense for me. It's the 2014 Ford Fusion. I'm done with the show today. I'm out at meetings this afternoon. This morning I was at a couple of meetings starting at 6:30. I'm on the go with the command center. I can make calls. Eric and I go back and forth. What are you working on? What do you need me to work on? What are you thinking on this subject? That's how it is in business. When you guys are doing your business during the day, are you doing it in a car that you really like? Are you driving around from place to place in a vehicle that makes the most sense for you? If you're thinking, well, no, I'm not, then stop into Santan Ford. General Manager Tim Hovick is a huge sports fan. He just finished up an enormous March Madness promotion. He is involved with the Cardinals. He's involved with the Diamondbacks. If you haven't seen all the billboards around the valley, there's Tim Hovick ripping open his shirt. He's got the Diamondback jersey underneath it. I was joking with him the other day. He threw out a first pitch. I hope you throw it better than the Diamondback pitchers have been doing it. So he has a lot of fun with it. That's at Santan Ford off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is, all about you, a big part of what we do here at Sports360AZ.com. The Texans, a couple other NFL notes. The Texans are going to bring in both Johnny Manziel and Blake Bortles. Poor Blake Bortles has no shot. If Houston were to take Blake Bortles over Johnny Manziel, after all the buildup and all the hype, I was in Houston last week, there's not a chance they'd win in the court of public opinion. These guys have done a very good job, a masterful job, I think, of creating the buzz around Johnny Manziel. They really have. Sports 360 AZ, plenty of content up. Our all-academic teams are out. You can check those out. Your kid may be on there. You may want to nominate your kid to be on our all-academic teams on the high school level. On the college level, plenty of content around U of A and ASU. I'll be in Tucson tomorrow with U of A football. Brad Sussmat, stay with us.